All right, good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are through that foyer or around and up the stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step three. I'd like to ask you to help me welcome our panel. We've got Grace and Jason. Alrighty, I will read the first paragraph, which is going to start on page 60, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, if you'd like to follow along, we're on page 60, and step three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Alright. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if He were sought. Jason, would you like to start?
Sure. Hey, everybody. I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
My sobriety date is August 4th of 2013, which brought to an end about 30 years of drinking and taking drugs every day from the time I was 15 until I was 45. And when I first came into AA, I didn't get it. It took me about 8 years to get the white chip that was today my last white chip. And part of the reason, I think, is because I was nudged in. I didn't really come in here because I wanted to get well or even I thought I had a problem. I was in trouble at home. My former wife was pregnant with our second child, and she said she was going to take the kids if I didn't stop drinking. And so that was enough to get my attention, at least to look like I was doing something. And I came in, but I came in and out for a long time, and I've had a chance to think about why. And to me, it's about the depth of surrender, that when I first came in, I was here to get out of trouble, to learn how to do some things better, but not really to turn over my life, to change my life. And I know there were some people around me trying to convey that message when I was coming in and out. When I first started going to AA in earnest, as my life was really disintegrating, I was out at the beach. I used to go to meetings on Friday nights and Saturday nights at the Psych Center. This is back when they used to bring the patients down, so it was a pretty powerful place. And there was an old guy there, an old-timer, and they used to call him Third Step Joe, which I always thought was a really cool nickname. I mean, you hear a lot of nicknames in AA like Big John or Little John or, you know, Tie-Dye Fred, but Third Step Joe seems like, you know, he carried a message, and people responded to that. So Third Step Joe used to come up to me after the meetings, and he'd say, "Hey, you think you're a smart guy. What are the ABCs?" And I would look at him with sort of a blank stare, and even though I'd been sitting in meetings, I don't think I was really listening and thinking to these, what these meant and how they applied to my life. But I can see that Joe was trying to give me a nudge, was trying to help me understand that not surrendering in a meaningful way was a problem. And now I look at these paragraphs as letting us know where we need to be to move forward with the program, to have the spiritual experience that I need to stop drinking. And at that time, I knew I was an alcoholic and I couldn't manage my own life, but I don't think I really grasped that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I still thought I could figure something out. I was kind of studying the 12 steps, reading the book with you, taking notes, thinking maybe I'd get a certificate or a, you know, diploma and get out of here and go back to my life. And so not being able to acknowledge that human power was just a useless solution was part of it. And then the other part for me, that God could and would help me if he were sought, I did not have any relationship with God at all at that point in time. When I was a child, some things happened that made me believe that either God was unfair or God was not looking out for me. My mother was an addict. I know there's a lot of people in the rooms who've had alcoholic and addicts as parents, and she set the house on fire when I was six, and she passed away. She passed out while she was high, and she was smoking a cigarette, and my sister and I were able to get out of the house, but I never really felt much affection for God after that point. I kind of felt like something bad happened, shouldn't have happened, I don't understand why. And it took me a long time until really working through the fourth step to acknowledge that I had a resentment towards God, that I didn't believe, that there was no room for God in my life. And so the combination of thinking I could figure it out and not being open to God earned me 8 years of coming in and out and a lot of extra misery. And so thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Hi, I'm Grace. I'm an alcoholic.
Grace.
Jason, you said everything I was going to say? Anyway, the ABCs, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and that, you know, that's 1, 2, and 3. That's 1, 2, and 3. For me, when I got here, God had done for me already what I couldn't do for myself. I was all out of options. When I walked in here, I have one white chip, but that's because I spent 15 years just not drinking. I'm pretty strong-willed, and in 1987, a horrible event happened, and it was clearly alcohol was the problem, so I stopped drinking, and I went on with my happy little life, and eventually, it made perfect sense, and no, nothing horrible, I wasn't drinking at something. I thought, it'll be different this time, I can have a drink, and so I picked up a drink again. And I didn't know then I could actually claim ignorance at that point, because I really didn't understand the disease of alcoholism. And I picked up that drink, and I was off to the races. And it was 10 years of everything we read and hear about, trying to control my drinking, trying to change my drinking, you know, trying to not drink, trying to... And eventually, I drank my way through every penny I had, every relationship I had, every home, car, job, and gave my kids away. So when I got here, I was out of all ideas. I had no more ideas. So when I think about the first two steps, I remember when I came in and I got a sponsor and I did what they told me to do. You know, I'm a rehab wonder, and you know, they told me to do, you know, don't drink, go to meetings, get a sponsor, join a home group. And when I left there, I had a checklist, and I did them, and I was pretty convinced that I couldn't do it by myself. This is hindsight, and I tell this story. I was going to tell it later, but I'll tell it now. While I was in this rehab, they take you through the 5 steps in 30 days program, which I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know about the steps. What I thought was they wouldn't let me out unless I did it right. So I'm doing my best. We get to the third step, and I kept reading this thing, and I was trying really hard. I was trying really, really, really hard. I remember they had this place, the Serenity Trail. It's a beautiful place, little places where you can meditate at each step, and I'm at the third step, and I cannot for the life of me figure out how to turn my will over to God. I didn't dispute there was a God, but it was that I think I was like trying to just do it, and I was frustrated with it, mainly because I was afraid they wouldn't let me leave. I was still very delusional. It didn't occur to me that I was paying for this place and that they would be happy for me to leave. Anyway, I was on that trail and something happened to me. I was sitting there, I was doing my best to what I consider pray and be still. I'm still batshit crazy. And something happened. I call it a white light moment, but something touched me. And every bit of anxiety and fear that I had felt for my whole life went away. It just went away. And I thought, this is it. This is it. And I walked off of there and people said, you know, you look different. You know, I was walking different. I felt different. And I thought, I've taken the third step. And so God did for me again what I couldn't do for myself. What happened was, and I know this to be true today, I got a taste of serenity. I got a taste of peace, and I wanted more. I wanted more, and so I went on, and I settled the hell down, and started listening, and stopped fighting. Anyway, that's all I got on that. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, the second reading is also on page 60. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live life by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
After my period of serial relapse, the 8 years coming in and out, I finally reached the willingness to do something, to take some action and to ask for help, because my life came completely apart. When I first came in, I felt like I had kind of a high bottom when I was nudged in, and then I went back out and I came back with kind of a medium bottom, and then I went back out and the bottom kept getting closer to me, or I kept getting closer to a low bottom. And I really do feel it is a progressive disease. But finally, I got arrested, and I was in jail. I went to rehab, and I was finally willing to do something about it, but I still didn't really understand what was going on here. And part of the problem for me is that I didn't think I was a controlling person. I understand now, having spent a lot of time thinking about this, that I do have an opinion on everything. I have an idea how everything should go, from things at work to things at home to a restaurant to waiting in line at the post office to a meeting. I have a detailed list of expectations, but I didn't think I was the director because I don't necessarily tell people what to do a lot, and somehow that's the way I envision this. But for me, it plays out a lot in being manipulative. So I know what I want to have happen, and I'm pulling as many strings as I can. And I do feel a little bit, well-intentioned, as it says here, because I feel like, well, I'm at work. I'm trying to get everybody to do things my way. Well, it's because I want the company to do well. Or in my family, if I'm giving them unsolicited advice, it's because, I want the best for people. But really, I just want my own way. And as it says, sometimes that is well-intentioned and sometimes it's not. But always having an opinion of how things should go leads me to be frustrated and resentful quite often because I don't get my way that often. Sometimes I do. It's probably just luck. But when they talk about collision, I think about in my own experience when I was first trying to get sober or in the middle of the journey, I had an experience on Anabuse, which you don't hear people talk about a whole lot now, but the short version is it's a medicine you take that makes you not drink or makes you sick if you drink. And what that bought me was a dry drunk experience of the highest quality, I would say, where I felt a barrier between me and drinking, but I had no solution. I had no idea what the problem was. And I was such a jerk for a whole year and I was miserable when I was taking the Anabuse. And I mention it now when I think about the collision with people. I was fired from a job, a corporate job. And they gave two reasons why I was let go. One was alienating my coworkers, and the other was insubordination. And so to me, that kind of says it all, that clearly I want to run the show, and I'm unhappy when people don't do what I want. And I've learned as I do inventory, and then as I learn now to reflect on my day at the end of the day, that I'm always unhappy with my boss. That's a thing for me. It's my most common resentment. And the first time I did the four step, I could write in the name of a boss. But now when I take inventory, it's just my boss. It could be any job. And at first I thought it was this boss was a jerk. But then the next boss was also kind of a jerk at a totally different place. And then the next boss at the same place was also a jerk. And so I'm starting to see a common thread here. And the idea to me that, I'll complain, this guy is telling me what to do. I get to work in the morning. He's telling me what to do. It's not what I want to do. And I'm surprised by the idea that my boss, who's given me the job, who signs my checks, wants to tell me what to do. But even that is repugnant to me because I want to be calling the shots whatever stage I'm at. And the worst part about it for me, the kind of subtle or sneaky controlling, where I want to control everything, but I don't feel like I'm pounding the table, so I'm not in touch with how much expectation I'm bringing to life, is sometimes I'll have a list of expectations for you all, and I won't even tell you what they are, and you have to guess, and if you guess wrong, then I'm really ticked off. And so it's one thing to say, go pick that up, and someone doesn't, and then I can be resentful. But it's another thing. I'm so sick that I know what I want you to do, and I won't even tell you because it's a test of whether you're really, I'm worth, you care about me or validate me. And so I set myself up for a ton of frustration by trying to control things, and sometimes by ESP trying to control you all. And so I can now see this clearly in my life. Thanks for letting me share.
The first requirement of being convinced of any life run on self-will. Again, the steps for me are, I had to do them once. I had to do them the first time. And then I, having had this sponsor thing that they told me that I had to have, when I get to the third step, I told you the story about I had the white light moment and I thought I had taken the third step, and I'm good. I feel great. And then I get out of rehab and I go back to my life. And she'd say, you know, you have to do that all over and over again. So when I read the rest of this stuff, and I love the big book. I read it. I still read it over and over, and I still get something different out of it. But I notice in here I kept writing, controlling, 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 controlling. I was a control freak. That was the term I had for it. The reason I control things is so that I'll feel better. That's the root of it for me. And what was freeing about this concept that I was going to let God do it was that it was going to be better than my way. And I wrapped my head around that, except when I didn't like what might happen. So I can relate to everything this says as it's written on paper. But when I put it into practical use, like my 90-year-old mother and my younger sister, we both have power of attorney for her, and I'm trying not to, I'm scared. What do I do? My sister's telling me to do something, and I know in the rooms with the steps I'm supposed to trust God. My fear kicks in. That's where I get to use these steps practically. If I try and control, that's the word I use, it's my will. It's my will. Relationships are my problem. It's other people. I'd be great if you dropped me on a plant, on an island with no people. With no people. I'd be fine. Because you guys piss me off. You don't talk to me right. You don't look at me right. I love it when you said ESB. I call it being psychic. See, I think I know what you're thinking. And then I react to it. You haven't even said anything. And I'll sit here and they're not, they don't like me. They don't like me. And then I start getting afraid and I shut down. So this step for me is the only thing you need is willingness. Is willingness. It's the beginning of the solution. I tried really hard the first time I did these to get them just right. What I have found out as I've worked the steps over and over and over again is that step three means that I'm not going to run the show. I'm going to let God do this. Sometimes it's not God. Sometimes, it's call a plumber or a roofer. Or if the roof's leaking, call a roofer. I'm not it. I'm not God. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Third reading is on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
What usually happens? Well, for me, this can deteriorate for me in two ways. One is I can get what I want, but I really don't know what's good for me. My judgment's not very good in terms of picking out the best outcome. And I may not actually do well with what I think I want. Or I don't get what I want. I become very resentful. But first, in part of my life, I I was so insecure that I would drink to put an anesthetic on my brain to stop the anxiety. And then the other thing I would do is I would try to look externally successful to get some kind of validation so that I had two props that were holding me up, the anesthetic and then the stamp of approval that would somehow validate my very fragile ego. But together they don't work very well because it's hard to achieve a lot when you're drinking a lot. And so it crumbled on me. But when I was still sort of a functional alcoholic, I got a lot of what I wanted. I made it through school. I became a lawyer after college. I got the job that I had always wanted. I was sort of a tree hugger when I was younger, and I wanted to be an environmental protector, and so I put all this effort into getting a job with the government in environmental protection, and I got it, what I always wanted. And then I got married, I got a house, I got a car, I got two kids. I had everything that I thought I wanted on the outside, and I felt terrible because inside I was hollow, I was rotten. Nothing that I was really trying to do was for a meaningful happiness. I just kept getting driven by, I want to do better, I want to look better. And so if I was the director, it wouldn't work out very well because my script's not so hot. I don't know what's important because I get caught up in anything that will help me prop up the anxiety. And that's the best case scenario. I get what I want and I don't like it. The worst case scenario here is that I don't get what I want and I'm resentful. And so for me, that is every day, almost every step of the way, because I do have this full set of expectations for what should happen in life. I know what should happen in all these situations, and lots of times it doesn't happen. And I found that while I was working my way towards my bottom drinking, that I was like a resentment breeding ground. My whole life was just, it existed to create resentments and fester them and grow. And all I had was really resentment and self-pity. And I would tell you that my job was terrible, my boss was terrible, my ex-wife was terrible, the girlfriend was terrible. There was always something wrong with somebody else that made me unhappy. They weren't doing what I want, which really all turned out to be totally wrong, and I didn't know it. I know it now, and it actually liberates me because now I don't feel so sure I know what's right or what's wrong. And just to show how far off I was, because I was so resentful that my expectations weren't being met. If you had asked me before I got arrested about my job, I would have said that it sucks. I would say they don't appreciate me, they don't treat me well, they don't pay me enough, I don't have a title, blah, blah, blah. And I would have meant it. I would have been probably on the bar stool complaining about it. And if that was on Friday morning, on Saturday, I got arrested for a felony DUI. It was my third DUI, but really many times. Unfortunately, I drove while I was intoxicated. I'm just grateful nobody got hurt. But I did get arrested. So that Friday, you'd have asked me how I feel about work, and I would have told you how lousy it was. And then I went AWOL for 4 months and didn't go back to work. It took me a while to even get in touch with them, because when I got arrested, I didn't know anybody's phone number, because apparently we don't know anybody's phone number anymore. We just use speed dial. And the only thing I can remember was my parents' phone number, which was long distance, which is kind of hard to call from a jail. But that's a different story. I don't want to help prepare anybody for that first phone call. But it took me days to even tell them that I wasn't coming in or why I wasn't coming in. I had to get in touch with my parents, who called one person from work, who told my boss. And then I literally didn't go to work for 4 months. I went to rehab for a month, and then I had to serve 90 days in jail. And they kept the job for me. They kept the job. They kept my desk, and they just basically cleaned it up. And my boss told everybody, we're not going to talk about this. He's dealing with his thing. And when I got back, they put me on double, triple probation, which I deserve. So no drinking allowed. But they gave me another chance. They saved my career, my financial livelihood. I would have told you straight in the eye that I had the worst employer in the world the day before I got arrested. And all of that is just self-pity. That's me. I want to be in this position. I want them to say these things to me, to validate me in some ways that are meaningless. And the same thing plays out if you ask me about my ex-wife. She took my kids to D.C. and moved them away, and she's a terrible person, and she's hurting the kids. That's not true at all. She was trying to protect the kids, and she wanted to be near her family, and it's a good place for my kids to live. And I would have told you that it was horrible that I have to go visit my kids in D.C., and what a burden. And now I would tell you it's kind of fun to leave town every once in a while. And these things that I saw completely opposite when it was about my expectation, my disappointment, I'm buried in resentment, and drinking is the only thing I can do to really breathe. And it turns out none of them were true at all. And that state of wanting to control and the resentment that comes from it is horrible. And that one of the greatest gifts in sobriety is not knowing what the right outcome is, so I don't have to carry that around all the time and then the feelings that come after it. Thanks for letting me share.
This says the show doesn't come off very well. Again, when I got here, my life was a wreck. It was documented. I mean, there were you know, court files, and people didn't speak to me. I had been, you know, every single thing I had ever tried to do, didn't work. It just didn't work. It didn't work. When I read these pages and I saw how truly self-centered, dishonest. When I got here, I used to tell people I was a professional liar, and the ends always justified the means. The ends always justified the means. I would steal from you, lie to you, cheat you, ignore whatever in order to get what I want, what I thought was the right thing to do. It never worked out well. People were mad at me. They didn't want to talk to me. I was unemployable. you know, the police were after me. Nothing was working. So this confusion rather than harmony, that was my life. Everything. Chaos, that was what I wrote here. That's what it felt like. The best part about this was that it was telling me that I wasn't supposed to be in charge. I had lived my whole life, I was raised, this is what I heard anyway, that you're a strong woman, you're smart, you've been given everything. If there's a problem, you fix it. You fix it. And I failed. I failed. So on the outside, I wanted everybody to think everything was all right. And on the inside, I was falling apart. So for this, the words on these pages gave me a way out. I don't think, and I got to be real honest, when I go back over here and it says that God could and would if he were sought. When I first got here, I did not have a relationship with God. I knew that one existed. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was my higher power. This is where I felt safe. If there's anyone here who's new or struggling, I can't stress that enough. I don't think I found a relationship with God until much later on in these steps. But the third step was where I made a decision that it wasn't me anymore. It wasn't me. And I was okay with that. And that, I think, was that relief I got that day on that beautiful trail, was that I stopped running the show. And I kept moving forward because my life was a wreck. When I talk to people or sponsor women today, and I was talking to some women before the meeting, and I call it the big butt, you know. We'll turn it over. God's got this, but I don't know. I think I got a good idea. I got an idea. That's when, for me, I got to stop. I got to pause. Because I'm going to run right back into what it says here. Confusion rather than harmony. Chaos. Resentments. I don't even know what that word meant. when I got here. Resentment, I don't know. I was mad at you, maybe. I didn't realize that it was this thing that grew up inside of me that caused me to react differently. What I know is when I got here, I was a victim. Everyone was doing it to me, which left me a mess, having to make everybody else do what I needed them to do. So moving on, I can't wait till the next page. Thanks.
Thank you. All righty, page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
So this is the point for me where I really have to pivot. When we talk about an entire psychic change, I did feel like a victim. I felt like things were happening to me. I had no responsibility for it. And this was quite a wake-up call to see that I am responsible and that I'm causing these problems. And once I see that, then I'm willing to walk forward, but I still want to try to figure this out. And I think about how many self-help books I have read in my life. I think you can tell a lot about a person based on which section of Barnes & Noble do they go to first when you wander in or you've got extra time. You can find me at the self-help section. Still, today, I'm always wondering, or at the thrift store if they have books, I'm always wondering, you know, did I miss the one book that's going to help me help myself? And I like when Bob Darrow shares that he was showing his self-help section to somebody or his sponsor, and he said, well, where's your help others section? I didn't have one of those. All I had was help me. And literally, I mean, I could think of, I don't know, from Chicken Soup for the Soul to Everything You Needed to Know You Learn in Kindergarten to Don't Sweat the Small Stuff to Eckhart Tolle. I mean, I read it all because I was going to learn something and figure something out. And I know today that I cannot unroot this selfishness, this desire to control. I need God's help because it's not something I can do as a human being. Because even when I get a little bit of a break from it, it comes back. So I mentioned that I resent every boss I've ever had. And when I do a daily inventory or I review my day, I find the same things pretty much every day. There's not a lot of new stuff. It's either it's a girl or it's someone in my family or it's my boss. It's the same things, not doing what I want them to do. And even when I see it several days in a row and I know what the problem is I'm responsible, I have expectations, people are not following my directions, well, that makes it easy. Then I'll just not do that tomorrow. But even if I pray in the morning and I seek guidance during the day, most days there's a point at which I flip back into that automatic default mode where I know what's right, that's supposed to happen. It's not happening now. Why isn't it happening? And I'm back right in the middle of all of this. And so how do I break that? I like the metaphor. There's a speaker that talks about the vultures on the bedpost, that when I wake up in the morning, they're there waiting for me. The voices in my head, the committee that's got a bunch of topics. And even if I pray, by the time I'm in the shower, I start thinking about something. I've got it either something from yesterday I'm going to replay and want to figure out, or something for today. It's like a weed that needs to really be uprooted. And if I don't get to the bottom of this, it's coming back. And the only way for me to do that is to be able to is to have help from God. And that's what I got. Thanks.
This is my favorite page in the book. It tells me what's wrong with me, and it tells me what to do about it. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Well, pretty much. Every single problem I've had That is the problem. Selfishness and self-centeredness. I have an abnormal sense of self. I think about me all the time. I think you're thinking about me. I think about me. It's not right. It's not right. But I'm really glad I'm in here because I'm pretty sure you guys do too. So, and again, I'm psychic, so I know what you're thinking. But that's the problem. It used to drive me. I love this. Driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. And I believe my own shit. I believe what I think. It's not true. Self-seeking and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Boy, when I got honest and I looked back and I looked at all those relationships or all those things that I thought were the problem, that was me. I caused it by my self-centeredness. So that's my problem, is self, which is the beauty of this step, which is why I'm really glad I didn't have to do it that one time on the Serenity Trail and be done with it. You know, I get to make this decision. And it is a decision. I now understand that's what my sponsor was telling me. When that big butt's coming up in my head, you know, is this is special. This situation's special. No. If I'm disturbed, it's because somehow or another the outcome is going to affect me. That's the problem. That's why I'm disturbed. And so at that point, I can make a decision. I'm gonna let go of it. I'm going to turn it over. And every time I do that, this is big book, but in the 12 and 12, the last paragraph, please, it's beautiful. And on the third step, it says, in all moments of emotional disturbance, all, I don't get to pick. It says, we pause, we pray, we ask God, you know, we go to God with it. We go to God. At best, I can stop and not react. I had spent my whole life reacting. I called it knee-jerk. You know, something happened, and I'm on it. There's no moment. There's no second. I got it. And at 52, it was a train wreck, trust me. And I had taken hostages. I was really, really, really glad to be able to be. This is a gift. It's hard when I'm afraid, but that's why I like where it says driven by 100 forms of fear, because that's what I react out of. At the base of it all, I'm a, you know, very self-sufficient grown-ass woman, but I'm fear-driven, and it's either fear of losing something I have or not getting something I want. There goes self again, and I will react. But this tells me I don't have to. It's giving me that way out. I heard Sandy B, who has passed away, one of my favorite speakers, and he really simplified it, this whole thing. He said, if you don't overcomplicate things, you know, third step, if you make a decision to do the rest of the steps. You'll get to that power greater than yourself. But these pages, I have to read these pages every day because it tells me what the problem is. It reminds me, and it tells me what to do. We didn't read it, but if you read down further, it tells you things.
All right. Page 62 again. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom.
Oh, the word freedom in the section resonates with me because I think I first started to feel any sense of peace and freedom when I take the burden off of myself to figure out what's supposed to happen, and I just try to act to follow God's will for me. When I finally surrendered, I can remember the moment very clearly. I was sitting in rehab and I was in the group, the small group, and I was worrying really profoundly and incessantly about what was going to happen in my life. What's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen with the courts? What's going to happen with my kids? What's going to happen with my finances? I'm consumed with worry and trying to figure out things that I can't figure out. I just can't figure them out. I have no idea what's going to happen. And I knew that it was going to be uncertain for quite some time. And so I felt an immense amount of uncertainty, of lack of knowing. And that's when I finally said, I'm done. I just can't figure this out. I have no ideas that are going to work here. God, if you could just show me what you want me to do, whatever it is, I'll just go with it because I don't have anything useful here. And from that time, I felt just a little bit, every day, a little bit less compelled to try to figure things out. And I know that I can always come back to the foundation or the keystone where I can just think about what does God want me to do. And when I read, you know, the metaphors, you've got the director or the principal or the father. For me, I like the principal and we are the agents, because when I think of that, I think of someone that I am. I'm the agent I'm loyal to. I have to act in good faith and honestly. And if I can come back to that, which is I may not have directions from the director all the time, but I know that if I do the next right thing, chances are I'm not going to create any additional problems for myself. And so I remember learning this when I was in rehab. I say to the counselor, well, what am I going to tell my employer? I don't know what's going to happen. I could be in a lot of trouble. And she would say, well, maybe you should tell them the truth. So I let that sink in for a little bit. And I was like, that seems like not a bad idea. And then I said, well, what am I going to tell my kids? Because I don't know what's going to happen. I may be in trouble. It may take a while. And she said, well, why don't you tell them the truth? And I thought about that for a little while. And I said, yeah, that's a pretty good suggestion also. And I'm starting to see that I don't have to figure out the story to tell everybody. If I just can be honest and try to do the next right thing, it makes my life a lot simpler. And even if I don't act perfectly, which I won't, I'm not creating problems, the chaos, the way I used to. And so being able to fall back on that, I'm the agent, I'm loyally and with faith and trust trying to do what God wants as best as I can figure it out, gives me so much relief from not having to figure things out, because I can't. Thanks.
I take direction today. I didn't used to. I was defiant, and I didn't like to be told what to do. And I really, you know, I just didn't. But with some practice, and again, I say this, when I first got here, I believed in God, but I didn't have a relationship when I got here. It was you guys. It was my sponsor. And so there's a growth, and I'm really grateful for that, you know, in recovery. My sobriety date is August 31st, 2011. I haven't been around a long, long time, but long enough that I've gotten to take the lid off of this power greater than myself, and it's gotten bigger. But when I got here, I really had to take directions from you guys. I mean, I needed you to tell me what to do. I thought a good idea was to, I didn't have car insurance, you know. I had this guy who had it in his name because I really didn't have a license. So I thought I needed to call him up. And, oh, by the way, I used to get drunk with him, and it'd be okay. I wouldn't drink. But I thought that'd be a good idea, you know. So I called my sponsor, and I had a moment of clarity and told her the truth. Again, professional liar. And she said, I don't think that's a good idea. Why don't you try getting a license? And getting car insurance in your own name. I take direction today. I suck as the director, and I get that. I like the director. I'm the agent, you know. I like the one, you know, the actor. And we didn't read it. I don't think we're going to read it. If I skip ahead, are we? We're going right to the prayer after this, right? But this, so I'm going to skip ahead. So we had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. And I have found that to be true every single time. Whoever I'm asking, whether it's God or one of you guys or my sponsor, what I should do, I get a better idea than the one I think of. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him, and he performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. I'm getting out of self. I love this. Our little plans and designs. I was like a little spider, just spinning up new ideas that you should do so that I'll feel better. I don't care about you guys. I want to feel better. And then, more and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Damn. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, that's that thing I felt. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I wanted more of it. It's that peace of mind. I wasn't afraid anymore. As we discovered we could face life successfully, and I hadn't been successful in a really, really long time. This is just so much hope. As we became conscious of his presence, I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was awesome. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. That's why I read that every day, because I just think I can trust that and not be afraid. And try and get over that abnormal sense of self I have. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you. And our final reading, page 63, we were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
I remember the first time I recited the third step prayer. I was with my sponsor out at the beach when I was trying to get sober. I remember we were in the Friends meeting house in the basement before this meeting we used to go to. And this sponsor, he used to help me surrender. He used to say, I used to complain about everything when I was, and I'd say, you know, I'm complaining about my job. And he'd look at me and he'd say, who's in charge? And it was, I guess it was a rhetorical question, because apparently I'm not in charge. And what he was really saying is, do you realize God's in charge? And so I'd complain about a girl, and he'd say, who's in charge? I can still hear it, because he had a Swedish accent, and it was kind of thick. But over and over and over again, who's in charge was his response every time I complained about something. And eventually, you feel kind of dumb, because my first thought would be, well, I'd like to be in charge, and this is what I want to have happen. But really, I know the answer was that I'm not in charge, and that was his way of reminding me. This prayer, for me, actually helped open up my relationship with God. When I surrendered, finally, with some real willingness, when I was in rehab and I was in a lot of trouble, I didn't have a powerful relationship with God at that point in my life, but I had a willingness at that point because I needed the solution here. And I would just say the prayer over and over and over again. I didn't know how to pray, really. I hadn't done a lot of it. But for me, saying the prayer over and over would at least break the train of thought of the selfish locomotive that was pretty much out of control at that point. And I'd say it over and over again. And at that point, all I had was a willingness and an openness, which, thank goodness, is all I need. And that helped open me up to taking this journey, to taking the action that leads to cleaning house and then making amends and trying to help others. It leads to the spiritual experience that relieves my alcoholism. Now I have a meaningful relationship with the power greater than myself. I believe in God. I see the miracles all the time. But to start with, I just said this prayer over and over again because I knew I needed not to be in charge anymore. And that's what I got. Thanks.
I say this prayer every day, not always in the morning, though, I got to tell myself. Sometimes it's when I'm taking my will back and I get reminded, right-sized immediately. I go, oh, yeah, self again. I heard a gentleman, and I thought this was really interesting. Who has relapsed quite a few times, and had been around a long time, and he said that his sponsor told him to read that part where it says, "Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do that. Well, take away my difficulties," because his ego wouldn't allow him to come back in the rooms. And I thought that was really interesting, because victory over them may bear witness, you know, that wasn't about him. His relapsing wasn't even about him. My ego is so big, and I think about that. I have not relapsed. I'm blessed that I've stayed sober one day at a time, and today I'm pretty sure I'll stay sober today. But, you know, my ego, when I mess up, when it's not going the way I want it to go, when I think you're thinking about me, you know, it's not about me. That's what this prayer says to me, that if I'm doing God's will, and I am very seldom on a need-to-know basis, I usually do not know how this is all going to play out, but am I going to do it anyway? Am I going to suit up and show up anyway? I didn't want to come here tonight. I'm sorry. I've had a really long day. My daughter called, was texting me at 6:15. She's off with some Marine in Gloucester, and she's locked her keys out, and I'm like, I got things to do. I don't want to go over there. And then I had to work, and my mother, again, that whole story. And I said, damn, David asked me to come out here, and I didn't want to do it. But I put it in my GPS. Usually someone drives me because I don't see well at night. But and I'm really glad I did. Because, you know, when I do what I don't want to do, it's usually the right thing. And that's really hard for this self-centered person who really wants it to be all about her. I really believed it was. but the good part is that when I take this step, and I don't care what situation, that's what I mean. Anyone who's new, I really thought there was a magical staircase somewhere back here, and y'all, like, there was candles, and you took them, you know? That's it. Something happened. I have to do this all. I have to retrain my brain through the power of God, and it's through actions. That's the only thing I have to do, me, is to take the actions, like come here when I don't want to. And then God shows up. Or my favorite, and what I'm getting better at, is do nothing. Is do nothing and trust God. And that's really hard. And you didn't think we would talk this long, did you, Leanne? A couple of years ago, I got a new sponsor. And there's two things that make me crazy, money and my kids. They make me crazy. They send me into panic and fear and the need to do and fix. So I was freaking out. It was one of my kids. I don't even remember what it was. That's how this works. And my sponsor, who lives in Duck, was sick of hearing me. And so when she gets sick of hearing me do the same thing, you know, she'll send me a text with a suggestion. And so she said, sounds to me like you need to redefine the God of your understanding. You can do that? How do you do that? So she gave me this crazy little thing, and I lean towards the wacky, so if I offend anyone. But what it did for me was, see, when you told me in step one that I was powerless, and I got that. Lack of power is my dilemma. And then you told me that no human power is going to fix this stuff. And then I get to three, and I got to make this decision. But something, I can't let go. I'm still scared. Then for me, that says I don't trust God, when I'm not willing to do that. And so she gave me a way out. God bless her, you know. And don't laugh, but I'm going to share it with you. And I could show you. It's in my purse. She said, write it down. It's a help wanted ad. Help wanted. Must have. God of my understanding. And then I have a list. And when I need it, I add to it. And I then can walk across that line and do that 4, 5, 6, 7, and lay these steps down. because I get relief. And that's the point. And I never have to drink again. Thanks.
Thank you guys so much. Can we thank you for that? Alrighty, I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name's Ashton. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashton.
The Virginia bid for Circuit College in the Southeast region is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's having an event on October 29th in Hampton. I have a flyer on the Facebook thing, so if you want to get me, see me after this.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Yes.
Steve.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Hey, I'm Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Welcome.
Anybody else? Alrighty. There is literature available back there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a big book. And anything you can fold is free. We've also got newcomer packets. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Will anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And also, we've got to put all these chairs away. Brad's going to be in the back. If you're willing and able, bring him your chair. That'd be great. In closing, let's thank our panel one more time. Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step three at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is a Mexican restaurant on Colonial and 22nd. Let us know if you need help getting there. Let's see. Could I have a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs on page 164? Melissa? Thank you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And all those who would like, please help me close by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.